Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Look, you have heard us do an entire series on money. And it's that thing that nobody wants to talk about. People don't like to look at their bank accounts. They don't really understand about their estate, what to leave behind, what not. How many times have you been at family gatherings and people have said, I got nothing. I came into the world with nothing and I'm going to leave the world with nothing. That is actually not very true. Today, we're going to talk with James Gilbert, financial expert Edward Jones, about this, how to be prepared and prepared for your legacy. So the question really is, how prepared are we as Americans to leave a legacy to their families? Are we prepared? Do we think about being prepared? Do we wonder if we'll ever be prepared? Is it too daunting because we don't understand that folks like James and the folks at Edward Jones have figured out a way to help us, a kind and gentle way? Well, you're going to hear about that. James, great to have you.
Thank you for having me today, Dr. Pat.
Yeah. So that expression, oh my gosh, if I have heard that one time in my lifetime, I have heard it a million. Like I came into this world, you know what? And I'm going to leave the world that way. But the reality is that that isn't true. And the question for a lot of folks is, how do we even begin to think about this? You've been on the forefront. What have you discovered? What does the research say?
And that's such an excellent question. You know, going into a survey that we did in July of this past year, we called it Leaving a Legacy Survey. We interviewed Americans of all ages, various net worth, and various income. And we went into this with the perception that the public might view that it's only the wealthiest individuals and the wealthiest families that need an estate and legacy plan. We were really surprised by the results, Dr. Pat. It was that 77% of the people that we surveyed said that estate and legacy planning was really important to them. But get this, of those that we surveyed, only 24% of the people had actually designated beneficiaries on their various accounts. So what it taught us is there's a serious disconnect between what Americans are saying is important to them and what they're doing as far as some basic steps to have beneficiaries designated.
Yeah.
So there's a real disconnect, and we're trying to get that message out there because it's important.
It is, and one other thing I'd like you to touch upon, and this is the thing I discovered. It's like people go through phases of life, and they come up with beneficiaries, and they don't really look back that often. And what I'm trying to say here is, whatever you decided 40 years ago may not be applicable. And so how do we talk to folks to say, you know, it's like a computer. You got to stay up to date with what you want to happen to your legacy.
I appreciate that message. And that's so right. Because, you know, a properly planned estate strategy really ultimately puts you in control of how your assets are going to be distributed. You know, things like, who's going to be taking care of your children? Who are your dependents? What about some of those healthcare decisions that need to be made at the end of one's life? And you're exactly right. You said you need to review and update your plan. That's exactly right. And it was interesting because in the survey that we did, we asked the question, you know, what do you wish your parents would have done for you? And they came up with three things. They said, one, I wish my parents would have had a plan. Number two, I wish they would have paid off all their debt. And number three, I wish they would have told us where all their financial assets were.
Yeah.
And I would add one additional thing. It's really important to also know where your family's will is located.
And you know, there's something I learned along the way. One of the things that my mom did before she passed, my stepmom, is she handwrote a will. She handwrote it. And that wasn't really the issue. You know, she literally wrote us out and she said, this is the way I want this to go. And she laid it out. And you have to really look at the state that you're living in, because every state in the United States may have a different rule and guideline. And I know that you all help people with that to make sure that if you're living in Florida, as my mom did, they had certain guidelines that said only blood relatives can get anything in the estate. And I was a stepchild. So these are the kinds of things that if you take this journey by yourself, you may not get it right. Isn't that what you provide, is helping people not just understand, but make good choices?
You are right on it. And that's why one of the items that we're out there talking about is the simple concept is just make sure to meet with your financial advisor. They can help you start create the plan. A proper financial advisor is sort of like the quarterback. They are responsible to understand the bigger picture, to understand a little bit more about what your vision is, and they can help you get connected with various resources. You may or may not need an estate planning attorney, but something as simple as designating beneficiaries through your financial advisor, or at least getting that guidance, is just a simple first step that everybody can take, and they can take it right away.
Yeah. I was looking at what you all have prepared. Would you mind giving out the website, please? Because there is so much information here for people. And you've really broken this down like in layperson terms for folks. And that usually doesn't happen. Tell folks the website.
You got it. It's www.edwardjones.com/legacy. That's www.edwardjones.com/legacy. And anybody can go on there and look at the resources and tools that are available.
Yeah. I mean, I was so impressed by this, even the questions that you lay out, and you ask the questions, and that's a great format where you say things like, when should I start? Or why should I name beneficiaries? And the one I really like is the one that asks the question, should you set up a living trust? So there is a lot of information here for people, but most importantly, how do we help folks that maybe went through a rough patch during the economic downturn that we went through? I mean, a lot of people lost a lot of things. And some folks are thinking, why should I do planning now? I miss my shot. I don't think that's true.
I don't think it is either. You know, and we've all lost loved ones in our life. You know, and for me personally, we've had a couple of clients pass away this last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I've lost a couple of really close family members as well. Mm-hmm. And it's emotional. It's stressful, and it can really put people in an uncomfortable positions. You know, I think about the executor of a will, yeah, or the trustee of a trust, all the dependents that are involved. There's just a lot of emotions in the air, I think, yeah, that speaking the truth. And having an estate or a legacy plan in place is just one simple step that can help reduce some of that emotion and some of that stress for people. Mm-hmm. And that's why I would encourage people to start doing this now, so they do have a plan. And that's the message that we're really trying to convey today.
And one of the things that I know about people after doing this for about 15, 16 years, everyone has a story. And the idea that you're showing up here and talking about this, I can't help but think of how maybe perhaps your life has been affected by this in a way that has made you so passionate about helping others here.
And that's exactly right. You know, and everybody's been through it, and you learn from your various experiences. You know, and I'd just like to add one additional, mm-hmm, piece here. Yeah. You know, we all have the choice. We can leave the decisions of our estate and our legacy up to the state, or we can take control of it. And so I'm here to talk about that simple step of designating beneficiaries as one simple step that everybody can do that helps avoid probate. And that's the message here today.
I want to ask you this last question. I think there is something that doesn't happen. And I think it doesn't happen for a lot of reasons, but it's on your list. And it says, communicate your wishes to your family. I think that part right there, a lot of folks, especially if you're looking at the baby boomer generation, they actually are really like, you know, that's really personal. Why do I need to communicate my wishes to my family? But it's important to do that at some level because nobody likes to be blindsided, you know, when something happens. But more importantly, don't you think that it helps in case there's conflict?
Oh, 100%. You know, and here's the thing. There's no benefit to waiting on communicating, on drafting a legacy plan. You know, it's much like an airbag in a car. It's only useful if it was installed before the accident. And so that communication needs to happen beforehand, just like you said, so that people have realistic expectations and hopefully things can go a little bit smoother in a time of trouble.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me here today. Two things. Please give out your website again. And then I have one last question. James, I would love to know your personal message, what you want to leave us with today.
You got it. Yeah, the website is edwardjones.com/legacy. That's edwardjones.com/legacy. My personal message, just from doing this professionally and working with clients and seeing this with my family, those that have a well outlined and properly planned estate plan puts people in control. It takes some of the emotion away from troubling times. And I just encourage everybody to get out there, meet with your financial advisor, start the basic plan. There's no benefit to waiting. So just get out there and do it and communicate with your family.
I love it. Thank you so much. And again, that website for everybody, see if I got this right. It's edwardjones.com/legacy. Is that correct?
That is correct, Dr. Pat.
All right. Lots of information there, everybody. And, you know, if you don't really even know the questions, there's a phone number there. You can pick up the phone and call somebody. These folks are right there to help you. And don't be afraid that you don't know what you don't know, because when it comes to this topic, that's me. I don't know what I don't know. Yeah. We're going to take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
Your inspiration all day on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, listen, you have heard me do shows about the people that serve in our military and what they do, how they stand for what we believe in, the freedom that we have in our country. You've heard me talk about my own personal experience being a little bit older than most of you, have gone through wars like Vietnam, and I've seen what happens to family relatives, my own, because to be honest with you, I did try to serve, but there was no way that my father would let me go. But my family is that of very, very proud people. Now, I must say that the toughest points in time in my life, as I'm going to share with my very special guest, Vietnam War veteran James W. Bill Oxford, joining me here today. You're going to hear about what he has done, what we are going to talk about with the American Legion, and why this is it's so important. But here's what I want to say about my family. You know, people say they have problems around the holidays with family members for a lot of reasons. Here's the problems we have. The question still remains. Which is better? The Navy, the Army, the Marines, Coast Guard, Air Force? That is at least a four-hour conversation in half Italian language and a whole bunch of things going on. But the one thing I'll tell you, we're here to talk about what's important now, what the vision is, thanks to the commander, and what we need to know as we face challenges we've never seen before for our veterans. Commander, it's great to have you.
Thank you very much. It's a tremendous honor to represent the 1.8 million Legionnaires across the world, and an honor to be here.
I got to tell you, I used to march in the parades in New York City. I used
the
to march.
Parade. No,
yep.
Well,
yep. I used to get when, back in the day. Oh, am I dating myself right now? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. Once upon a time, there were parades that my family would say, okay, you kids, you got to get out there and march in the parade. Listen, this is a new day. This is a new age. We have new, what should I say, visions, especially for the American Legion. You're involved. Let's talk about where we've been and where we are today, and then where we're going. What is it that makes you fired up about this and getting the word out?
Well, let me address two things. You just talked about the parades.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we used to see the parades, and those the uniforms used to be what really was my hot butt. I knew from an early age, because of the uniforms, that I was supposed to be a soldier. So I understand completely what you talk about the pride, the Americanism, the patriotism that those kinds of things create. But when we think about who we are and where we're going, as of the world's, or I guess the country's largest veterans organization, we're concerned about veterans' rights and benefits and protecting those kinds of things. When we send people to war, men, women, we have a responsibility to provide for them when they come home. So that's sort of what the American Legion is and what we do, and our efforts are concentrated on.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm so there with you because, you know, many people that might be listening to this, they think, well, look, there's a system, people are taken care of. But I'll tell you the deal for me, and I hope you will talk about this. I don't know about you, but even to this day, our family members never would talk about what they went through, not whether it's World War II, not whether it's Vietnam, the Korean War. The people that come back, you know, they stay silent with a lot of pain and agony. And we've been trying to speak to the VA and say, look, we've got to find another way to provide help for people. But you're on top of this, aren't you?
Well, I won't say we're on top of it, but we are involved and actively participating in those kinds of issues. When we talk about veterans, they typically don't want to talk about the services they went through, the sacrifices they made, because they considered a duty, a responsibility, and they were willing to bear that burden. But as we move into to the next century or the next centennial of the American Legion, we need to make sure that those people, and that's all veterans, all across all services, regardless of which one you consider the best, we have a responsibility to make those people understand, hey, it's okay to talk about. We need to address the mental health issues and make sure, and over the years, there's been stigmas associated with that kind of thing. We got to remove that. We've got to make sure they understand we care. We want to help. Let us do what we can to make your life easier and more productive.
Yeah, that's really the area that I've been focusing on, because, you know, I've been begging and pleading and saying, look, you know, that box that gets checked on the form, we got to come up with another outlet, another way. Very active here where I live now. But I got to ask you this question. We're coming up on this 2019 Veterans Day, right? Veterans Day, right? We're coming up on that. But more so now than I think, or at least this is my feeling, more so now than in previous years, we have people that have been coming back from Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, what you name it, all over the world places. And it's almost as if they're not. I mean, it's almost as if we're not talking about that and not talking about what we need to do now, but also what we need to do in the future. What's your vision? What do you see?
Well, the mental health issues, and this can be traced back all the way back to World War I, when we talked about the battle fatigue or the thousand-yard stare, that there are issues that people develop, that people face because of traumatic things they've seen and been part of and been exposed to. But we our mental health concerns needs to be a priority, and that continues to be what we think about and look at and try to discuss with the Department of Veterans Affairs. But those issues are not just for veterans. We need to include families. Mm-hmm. We need to include relatives. Any of those folks, anybody that has interactions with a veteran, we need to convince them and remove the stigma and say, if you see something, say something. That's a term we hear a lot. But if there is anybody out there that sees a veteran, a person with mental health issues or developing crises for whatever reason, they need to be able to reach out and tell somebody that there's a crisis situation developing and we need to intervene. So yeah. as we move forward, that's going to be one of the things that we continue to emphasize.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is so important. I work with recovery arena, and I will tell you that never ever approach someone to help them without the family being involved, because it just is agonizing to not get the support. You really onto something. All right, let's talk now. These interviews are so short. I've got so much to talk to you about. Look, tell us about, because a lot of people don't know what you're about. I mean, I have a background, my family, so forth and so on, but I don't think people know how absolutely engaging and involving the American Legion is. I know because my Uncle Ralph was part of it for like decades, so I know about that. But most people don't. Give folks a snapshot of what you all have done, what you're doing now, and what you're planning to do. I know that's a lot, right?
How many weeks we got to do this?
Ted will give me another minute or so, I think.
Well, when we think about who the American Legion is and what we do, we're about protecting veterans' rights and benefits. That's our interaction with the Department of Veterans Affairs. We've talked a little bit about that, continue to emphasize those kinds of things. But another major part of the American Legion is our children and youth programs. Mm. And we're actively involved with our children and youth across the country. And they include things like our Boys State, Boys Nation, Girls State, our oratorical contest, our junior shooting sports, involvement with the junior ROTC, American mm-hmm. Legion baseball. And let me just add this. This past year, we put 55,000 young players on the field with our American Legion baseball program. And that's over 3,500 baseball teams across the country. So those kinds of things, as we look toward, and this is my thing, a foundation for the future. As we create the foundation for the future of the American Legion, we've got a solid hold on that. But when we think about creating a foundation for the future of this country, our children and youth programs, we had over 100,000 young folks involved with the American Legion program this year. The teaching, coaching, educating, mentoring that the American Legion provides to those young people are developing the future leaders of this country as we create the foundation for the future. So that's just a quick snapshot of who we are and what we do.
I got to tell you, you're talking to a old school softball gal right here, boy. I'll tell you. Here's what I want to say. I mean, we're always looking for ways. You're going to find this really interesting, and I hope you think about this in your future. I work with people, seniors right now, but people across the board that have had trauma in their lives. And believe it or not, Commander, listen to this. There is a sport we're now using to reverse dementia and Alzheimer's, and that's table tennis, better known as ping pong. There's an entire foundation, and you would be surprised at the implication for calming the mind. And if you ever want to talk to me about setting something up with the American Legion, I'm all in.
Well, that's good. That sounds like a wonderful program that might be beneficial to the Department of Veterans Affairs as they discuss and consider the mental health issues association with the things we're seeing now.
All right. Let me ask you this last question. I know I got 2 minutes. Legislation, Congress, bills, funds. We got to talk about this a little bit. Where are we?
Well, that's a good question. legislatively, Congress is there.
Come on, people.
the things we've got on the horizon from the American Legion, we are looking at the Pay Our Coast Guard Act. And I know everybody's aware of the fact that this passed early this year when the Coast Guard was not paid.
Yep.
The Legion, we put in $1 million to Coast Guard families and to help them support their young families in need of medical support or food or shelter. That was a direct donation from the American Legion, not a loan, but a direct grant. Then we're also looking at the repeal the widow's tax, which is taxing death benefits for spouses. And those are the two biggest things on the horizon right now. And let me say this. I'm going to the White House this afternoon to see or be present at the signing of the POW-MIA flag act. And that's brand new, happening today, in fact.
Yes, so, it is. Yeah. And so, I got to tell you, those two things you just mentioned, I want our listeners to know this, and I know you got to run. Everybody out there, listen to what the commander said. Taxing widows, not paying Coast Guard. I got to tell you, Commander, that is not the America that I'm used to. And boy, we have got to get some stuff done with that. And I'm so glad you are leading the charge. I really am. I am so glad. And boy, I'm telling you, to be at that signing today, wave to the camera. I'll wave back at you. What's the website? How can people find out more? And last question, what's your personal message?
Okay. The Legion website, www.legion.org, or Facebook or Twitter, or visit your local Legion post. Knock on the door and say, hey, I want to be involved. And my message, we are creating the foundation for the future of the American Legion and this country as we teach, educate, and mentor our young folks. Share the message. If you're a veteran, love to have you a member of the American Legion. Look us up.
And by the way, check out all of the community events, you know, what they're doing for scholarships, all of the above. I mean, the list that I'm looking at now for people here goes beyond anything that you can imagine. So I want to thank you, Commander. Let's take a short break. Let's get involved. Let's help everyone have a high quality of life. We'll be right back.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Inspire, create, empower, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, 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 welcome to our good news segment. Michelle McClellan is joining me here today, Senior Product Management Executive at Bank of America. Why? Because think about this. When you're thinking about where you're living, and many people are doing this right now, they're thinking, I don't know that I really feel like moving. But even if you are moving, you know, what are the things you're looking at? Well, you're looking at your kitchen and you're thinking, probably could use an upgrade. Maybe you're looking at your basement and saying, you know what, I could turn this thing around and I could rent it out. Whatever that is, there is some information for today that you're going to want to know about. That's what Michelle is doing here, because she's going to share some research and she's going to share some possibilities. It's great to have you, Michelle.
Great. Thanks for thanks for inviting me, Pat. And that was a perfect introduction. You could do my bit for me. You must be looking at some renovations yourself, Pat.
Well, you know, I tell you what's going on here. Well, you know what I do for a living, right? So I hear things from our listeners all the time. And one of the things I hear is, look, there's really nothing wrong where I live. I just think, my gosh, is there any way that I can kind of give this place a facelift? And I'm hearing that more and more and more and more. The other thing I will tell you about here where I live, here's what people are doing here. They are looking at their basements. Their kids have moved out. And they're saying, we are going to turn that 1,200 square foot basement into a daylight apartment. So people have this on their minds.
Yes, you're exactly right. And we're seeing that trend. We're seeing two trends. The first trend is that 80% of homes in the U.S. are at least 20 years old or older, some significantly older, right? So we've got older homes that are in need of either repairs or just remodeling and giving them a facelift, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But then we're also seeing this trend in the last 10 years, in particular after the financial crisis, where people don't want to move around as much. They like where they live. They like their neighborhood. You know, they like the school district and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily like everything about their home. So rather than going through the expense of moving, they say, let me just spruce this up.
What are you feeling about the numbers of people, the percentage of people? You know, how does it look? Are some people saying, let's just take on one little project, while others are saying, you know what, I'm never going to have a time like this. Let's take care of the entire first floor. What are people saying and feeling?
Yeah. Well, you know, that a lot of times just comes down to your comfort level and what you feel one you can just handle in terms of all that renovation. Because let's be honest, sometimes you got to move out or you got to live without a kitchen for a number of months. So some people take on little bits and then that motivates them to do the next thing. Or if it's like me, you start with one and then you say, oh, well, let's just keep going. So we really do see all of that. We see some people gut their whole house and start all over, like you see on the home shows. There really is no most popular way. It really comes down to what you're comfortable with, what you can live with, what you can handle, both financially and emotionally when it comes to these projects.
I think the big question, and this really plays, I think, a big part in it. I was talking to some folks I know, and what they were saying is they planned for a bigger renovation, let's say. And so the way that they got around that is they knew that the kitchen was going to come down. And they went out, they had to buy a grill anyway, and they bought something that could actually cook. But the question boils down to, and this is what they said to me. They said, okay, can you tell me how much money I can get? See, isn't that the question?
It is the question. So everybody's got big dreams, but then we got to pay for them, right? So you got to make sure before you get into it and you get overwhelmed with tile and colors and all that good stuff, all the fun stuff, first do your homework and make sure you know what you can afford. And that's where we really come into play, right? So we recommend for those big renovations that if you've built up equity in your home, that you consider a home equity line of credit. That's really the most flexible and convenient solution for you.
And how does that work, if you don't mind telling folks? Because I think, I don't want people to assume they know, because I think there are different versions of this, so to speak.
There are, and it can be very intimidating if you don't know, and it can be confusing with all the lingo out there. So essentially, it's pretty easy how it works. Let's say you own a home and it's worth $500,000, and you've got a mortgage of say $250,000. So you've got a good $250,000 of equity in your home.
Mm-hmm.
You could put that equity now to work. So you can borrow up to 80% of the value of the home as a line of credit. So let's say you need $50,000, right? You go to the bank and you apply for the $50,000 loan. It becomes a second, almost like a second lien. Mm-hmm. Against your house. But Dr. Pat, you only use what you need.
Exactly.
So what we encourage customers to do is, let's say you're thinking about renovations, find out what you can afford and get your financing taken care of before you even start working with a contract, so you have that confidence. And so if you take out, let's say you take out that 50 and your plan is only to use 25.
Right.
Well, you're only going to borrow and pay interest on what you use.
Right.
So if you don't use it, it's just there and it's available for you to use down the road for the next project, or maybe to finance college tuition or any other expenses that you may have. So it's really flexible because you don't have to show what you're spending it on. You don't have to produce receipts or any of those kind of things. Right.
Right.
Give you the line of credit. And then you go off and you you spend it however you want.
And, you know, the part of this that I really like is that, you know, when you look at something like this, you can really scope out the project. And I think part of this with the line of credit is you can also account for some unexpected things. I mean, any of us that has ever built a house, like, I watched my house being built from like the bottom up. There are things that you see and you say, oh, wait a minute, that wall needs a window or something like that. And it gives you that flexibility, doesn't it?
Exactly. So as long as you have the room available, then yeah, if you need mm-hmm. to make changes or you decide it's going to be 10% more than you thought,
yep.
you've got that access and that flexibility.
For the people listening, what do you think is the greatest challenge for folks looking at this?
Yeah, so I think, one, it's just taking the step, right? It's just the fear and the discomfort of, oh my goodness, you know, do I want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And more, I think that the financing part is actually the easiest part.
Yeah.
I'm in the business, right?
Yeah.
The contractor part and making all the decisions can be a bit overwhelming. So I think you got to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people actually do it themselves.
Yeah.
Another thing, Dr. Pat, some people love the sense of accomplishment of, I did this myself, I built this. So if you're handy, then, you know, that's a great skill to have. But we try to keep it as simple and easy for. We also want to look at your whole picture. We want to make sure that, you know, you're making a responsible decision, but we're also going to take into consideration your whole financial picture and make sure it's the right decision for you.
You know, I know these are short interviews, but I wanted to ask you a couple of other things.
Sure.
You know, what do you think as this starts to become more and more popular? And the reason I believe it is because it's exactly what we talked about before. People don't want to move. They're not really thinking about moving, and they don't really find places that they really want to move into because those people aren't moving. What are some of the tips you can give folks?
Yeah, I would say, you know, don't put it off, because if you put it off, then you can end up in a bigger mess or problem and have repairs in addition to the home improvements. Mm. And if you really want that dream kitchen and you've saved up all your life, just go mm-hmm. ahead and do it. And, you know, then you've got a place for your family to come and your friends to come. Just take a step. It's not as, you know, as daunting as it may seem. We give you 10 years to use that line of credit, so you've got that flexibility in place for a long time as your situation changes. And then after the 10 years, you've got 20 years to pay it back. So it's not just for, say, the first-time home buyer.
Uh-huh.
We see clients of all ages and all incomes taking out these lines of credit, because it really does give you the flexibility and convenience or something for everyone in there, no matter where you are in your life stage.
Yeah, I did not know that you could pay it back over a 20-year period.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's
yep.
fantastic. Yep. Yeah. Look,
and it's a low interest rate.
So I was just going to ask you that question.
Yeah. So when you take it out, there's no fees or any of that. And then the interest rate is based on the prime rate. So it does fluctuate. But the prime rate right now is 4.75%.
Yep.
So it's a really low rate. It's a lot lower than, say, if you were taking out a personal loan.
Yep.
Or a credit card. And we offer you an introductory rate for the first year that's prime minus up to 1.5%. So you can actually borrow in the 3% range, 3.25% range. Mm-hmm. It's really, really cost effective for you to do it.
Wow. Look, how can people find out more about this? Where should we send folks?
Yeah, so if you're in the Seattle area, you got a few options, right? You can go into one of our Bank of America financial centers and you can talk to a lending specialist, like I said, and they'll take a look at your whole picture. If you don't want to go into one of our centers, you can certainly do it online. You can use our mobile app if you're a customer, or mm-hmm. even if you're not a customer, you can go to bankofamerica.com and then search for home equity, and you can apply online. It takes only 10 minutes.
Wow.
And if you're real fancy, schmancy, and you got your smartphone in front of you, you can actually text us at 226-526, which is Bank AM, is what the number stands for.
That's cool.
And then just type in, home equity, and we'll send you a link and you can get started.
I love that. That is the world we are living in right now. Thank you so much for today, Michelle. One last question. What's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
I would like to say, love your home, love where you live, and make sure you enjoy your surroundings. So take advantage of any things that are going to help enhance that quality of life for you.
Yeah, that ties right in with our saying, love your life. All right, love your loan. Love your home, love your loan, love where you live, and love your life. Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for everything.
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
All right, everybody, let's take a short break. Please go ahead and take a look at this. And, for those folks out there, I just want you to know that if you don't want to do this online and you're like me, when next time you go into the bank or you call the bank, have a sit down with somebody, because I always like doing that much better. I love the face-to-face. All right, everybody, we'll be right back.
Did you know you already have everything you need to live a vibrant and powerful life? Who you are and how extraordinary your life is affected more by your mindset than anything else. Tune in live each week to Vibrant Powerful Moms, Mondays, 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern, to join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares tips, stories, and interviews with enlightened guests to help you create an extraordinary life. For more information, visit VibrantPowerfulMoms.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome to our good news segment. Look, here's the thing. Do you know what it's like to live with COPD? Do you know what the impact of that is? But here's what you may or may not know. Did you know that there are innovations, that there are changes, that there are stories that are success stories, that there are ways that we have now looked at innovations that probably were thought to be absolutely achievable years ago? But today, we're talking about a story that is beyond hope. This is COPD Awareness Month, and we are here today with a doctor that knows a lot about it, but also somebody that knows COPD up close and personal. Dr. Thomas C. Corbridge joining me here today. And Dr. Corbridge is one of those medical experts that when you think about our lives and you think about how do doctors understand the depth and the breadth of what goes on with us, literally speaking, you want to bring the experts to the table. But beyond that, what is it like when we look at a person, a wife, a mother, somebody that was diagnosed with COPD? What is it about a life and a life's journey that could go from helpless and hopeless to optimistic and amazing? That's what today's show is about. Dr. Corbridge, it's great to have you here. Candace, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Let's just start out with what people don't know. And many people have heard the term COPD. If you do any television watching, you see commercials on TV. But I don't think that people understand what the symptoms are. And what I mean by that is how to be on the lookout. So if we could start with that from your perspective, doctor. And then, Candace, I'd like to hear it from your perspective, what you experienced. Let's go.
So COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's an umbrella term that's really meant to encompass two more specific terms, emphysema on the one hand, which is loss of lung tissue, holes in the lung, and chronic bronchitis, which speaks to the disease's impact on the bronchial tubes, where they can become inflamed and narrow. And patients have combinations of these under that COPD label. And invariably, it causes the symptom of shortness of breath, which is often progressive, often peppered, you know, along the way by what we call flare-ups or exacerbations, these downturns that are particularly important in the life of a COPD patient, because not only do they set you back during that exacerbation, but they may lead to an additional decline in lung function, additional lung damage.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if people are tapping into this, but we are talking about our very existence. And, you know, today, Candace, you're coming to the forefront because you have a message to deliver, and it's a powerful one. From your perspective, what was this journey like? How did you realize there was something going on?
Well, I guess constant hospitalizations was a primary factor. I didn't take it seriously in the beginning. I've had COPD for many years. And it impacted me and my family so much, I finally decided I had to make a change. I couldn't continue to basically exist that way. So I started speaking to my doctor the way I needed to. I was very open with him and told him how I was feeling. And breathlessness is not just, oh, I'm a little short of breath. I mean, it can be devastating. It, you can't move around. You can't work. You can't take care of your family. You're in the hospital a lot, you're at the doctor a lot. And if you're not telling them honestly what's going on, if you're a smoker that you can't quit, they'll help you with that. There's just so much that they can help with now. Your treatment plan is going to be completely different than you actually envisioned. I work out now. I take much better care of myself because I want to be here. I have a family that I want to stay with. And life is good. I've made some huge changes and it only helped. I exercise now quite a bit. I participate in 5Ks with my youngest son. And so I've made a big change and it's only been for the better.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I think the thing that we're starting to see here is that everybody wants to talk about responsibility. I really want to talk about actability. And what that means is having a sense of hope that enables folks to do exactly what you do, even if it is one step at a time.
Absolutely.
And I want to thank you for sharing that. Doctor, I want to ask you a question. I mean, we are listening to Candace, and you know, in this brief time we have, she gave a beautiful explanation of how transformative her life has been. But this is one of those illnesses that literally could stop people in their tracks. I would love for you to talk a bit about this and why it is important for more and more people like Candace to come forward and share their stories.
Absolutely. And, you know, Candace's story is so inspirational. And we would very much hope that all of our patients could come in and really have that open and honest exchange with us and tell us really where they are truly on their journey. So one of the clear messages is to get in as early as possible. Understand that the symptoms you may be having, you know, shortness of breath in particular, may not just be from getting older or maybe getting heavier or maybe not being in good physical condition, but actually may be the early hallmarks of COPD. And so kind of understanding that and cataloging that as a patient is important to getting in early and building that relationship of trust and open communication with your physician, because that's how the physician you know, can kind of see where you are truly. The physicians, of course, will ask good probing questions to get at where you are from a shortness of breath point of view, understand where you are on that side of the fence. But they will also get into whether you've had these flare-ups or exacerbations. Just understanding where you are on kind of both sides of the symptom complex helps us craft our treatments. And the treatments can be very effective to alleviate shortness of breath and to prevent those exacerbations that may be coming and causing an additional damage. So, you know, getting in early and having that good and open exchange really starts the whole ball rolling.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you this because I think this is really, you know, we like to say here after 16 years of doing positive, purposeful talk, awareness is the first step. But after awareness, you know, there is a next step. There is an action step. Doctor, before I go back to Candace, I want to ask you a question about where are we today with this? And sort of this is a question, where are we today? But where have we been and where are we going? What are some of the innovations you're seeing?
Yeah, and I think, you know, your early points are just right on target. You know, increasing awareness so that action can follow. You know, we know that there's, you know, over 20 million Americans, adults that have COPD, even in your state, you know, over 330,000 adults have COPD. So awareness that would lead to action, because there is an understanding, we hope, as we get the message out, that this is treatable. So we want patients who are having symptoms and who are at risk of COPD, mainly because they have smoked, to come in earlier, recognize those symptoms, and get involved with a multi-pronged approach to treatment. And that's really where we've moved, multiple kind of a disciplinary approach to management, which of course starts with that good relationship and open exchange of information, smoking cessation if required, vaccinations, definitely getting back into an exercise regimen or formal pulmonary rehabilitation, and medications that can be crafted, you know, unique to each patient's circumstances. And what we know now, and this really is a different way of thinking, is that this is treatable. You know, we can improve your symptoms, we can relieve your breathlessness, we can get you back engaged and active in life, and very importantly, we can cut down on those flare-ups and exacerbations that may be coming your way. So really just doing what we know now well and in a multidisciplinary way is really, I think, where we need to keep headed.
Yeah, boy, thank you for that. Candace, I know we are short on time here, but before we get back to you, I think, Doctor, maybe you can tell me what the best website is, because I think the more information we can give out here, the better.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we would recommend going to copd.com, which is really a terrific website for patients to help navigate, you know, through their journey with COPD. It's got a wealth of information. It can help you prepare for physician visits by understanding what good questions you might want to ask during that visit. But it can take you lots of different directions depending on your interests and concerns. So copd.com would be certainly, I think, where we would both recommend that patients go.
All right. All right. Look, Candace, let's bring this home. And what I mean by that is your life has changed. You are somebody that has become a spokesperson to help people and give them a blueprint, because sometimes we need a map, a roadmap. What would you say to encourage people today about your journey and what they can do today?
Well, that it can be done. It may be a very slow start, but start with the first thing of being open with your doctor, letting them know the symptoms you are experiencing. Don't be afraid. Don't be concerned that there'll be judgment, because there will not be. They want to help you. That's why you're there. Advocate for your family. Let them help you if someone's available. Use a friend. Use someone that can be there for you, because there's times when you'll be unable to speak for yourself if you've reached that level. Keep moving. Find an exercise program, no matter what it is, because moving is going to help you in the long run. And trust me, it's hard, but it's worth it. Just keep one step at a time is sometimes all you have to give. But tomorrow there'll be two steps. the next day three, just keep moving forward because you can do this.
Mm. Wow. Thank you, Candace. Doctor, personal message. What do you want to leave us with?
You know, I certainly, you know, cannot even, you know, trump the inspirational story of Candace. But, you know, from our point of view, you know, we want patients to come in early to recognize those symptoms. Understand from a patient point of view that we as physicians are your advocates. We root for you. We want to help you. So we're there as a resource. So come in early. Try to be open and honest with where you are. And let us, you know, work with you to craft a unique multidisciplinary treatment plan that's there to help you feel better, be less breathless, and to prevent those exacerbations.
Thank you both. Thank you so much. For all of you out there, please go to copd.com. That's copd.com. And remember, stay strong, be hopeful, and take action. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Pat.